This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Now, the investigation into the bombing at the Boston Marathon is, of course, a fast-moving story. No doubt about that. But yesterday, things moved so quickly, major media outlets crashed and burned in spectacular fashion. It began at about 1:45 in the afternoon with CNN's John King.
Go ahead and tell us what you can.
I want to report some breaking news information from two sources. One is a Boston law enforcement source who tells me they believe they do have a significant breakthrough in the investigation. Authorities now believe they have identified a suspect.
All right. Now move forward about 22 minutes to 2:07 p.m.
The suspect that was identified has now been arrested.
We would assume that. I've just been told that an arrest has been made. An arrest has been made in this investigation, a dramatic shift.
An arrest has been made, and it is based not on one, but on two different video images of the suspect at the bombings.
Then, at 2:22 p.m.,
I want to be precise, and I want to make sure we have it right. It's important to get this information out there to the American public, and important to get this information out there in general, but it's much more important to make sure that we're precise and accurate.
And just 5 minutes after that, at 2:27 p.m.
And one of our justice producers is saying he's hearing information that there's not an arrest yet. Apprehension, an arrest, Miranda rights being processed. These can all mean different things to different people in the cloud of this.
Without an arrest, it could be an interview. He could have consented to it.
We should be a little bit cautious until we actually know that there's a person in custody.
Well, things were so wrong, so confused that just 1 minute after that, at 2:28, the FBI trotted out Assistant Director Tom Fuentes to clear things up for CNN.
There has been no arrest, and in fact, a suspect has not been identified by name yet. That they have, they're looking for someone, but they don't have anybody in custody yet, and they don't have an identification.
But by that time, the horse had left the barn, was pretty well over the next county, and totally out of sight. CNN anchors issued the most awkward mea culpa.
Okay, now, that would be, you know, we don't know what's right or not right at this point. And as Anderson always says, you don't want to go down the road of speculation wrongfully.
Right, down that road of speculation wrongfully, except for the fact that that was pretty much what had happened.
Well, joining me now for more on how and why the media got so much so wrong is Brooke Gladstone, host and editor of WNYC's On the Media and author of The Influencing Machine, Brooke Gladstone on the Media. Brooke, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
It's terrific to have you. So first and foremost, it's kind of easy to pick on CNN, but we should say that a lot of other media outlets also very quickly started saying that they had sources that said there were an arrest was either imminent or had happened. The AP, that was on our air here at WBUR for a little while until we had to issue an absolute clarification based on our latest information at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Lots of confusion. How did all of this get started?
Well, let me start first by saying that personally, this was not the worst thing that happened this week, because although many of us were let down and disappointed they didn't have a suspect in hand, the stakes were a lot lower than, say, somebody's child being misidentified as having survived, or a wrong picture up there, the kind of thing that causes, you know, incredible anguish. And mistakes were made all week. I mean, early on, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times cited unnamed sources wrongly claiming that more bombs had been found. Obviously, a lot of discussion around this Saudi national who was called by many news outlets a potential suspect, whatever that means. It doesn't really mean anything, but that caused him problems. Since the CNN debacle yesterday, there have been other people who have been wrongly fingered and then had to address that. So there's been a lot of this kind of stuff going on. I think the CNN one is particularly interesting because they were so proud of their scoop, and there was just so much schadenfreude in the rest of the media that they got it wrong.
I'm sorry, Brooke. I just want to say that I think, you know, keying off a point that you made, what's becoming increasingly disturbing to me as a member of the media is the frequency. I mean, this story here in Boston, as you were saying, is only a couple days old. It's 4 days old now. And we've already had so many examples of things going wrong. What's driving the increasing frequency of people just, you know, either reporting unconfirmed sources or single source, or just the race to be first?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a cliche right at the beginning, a lot of this has to do with the 24-hour news hole, this gaping, desperate, empty vacuum that people have to fill with something. And if they aren't filling it with speculation of the kind of, you know, who do you think did it, random individual, then they run around and they fill it with what they've got. I'll tell you, I don't know exactly what happened at CNN, but I do believe that Fran Townsend, the reporter who apparently got the story, did get it from a couple of sources, and that one of them was, in fact, as John King stated, a federal source. You have to know that the FBI leaks information all the time in a coordinated way to sweat suspects. Maybe there was some rump group inside the FBI or inside the Boston Police Department and elsewhere in the federal scene that thought it would be useful to shake things up, and then they were walked back.
Right.
I mean, as John King said, they were walking their statements back. He's flummoxed. This exact same thing happened when they were going after the anthrax bomber, you know, way back post 9/11, Andrew Hatfield, who turned out not to have who turned out to have been innocent, but the FBI was leaking tons of stuff about that investigation. Same thing with Richard Jewell, the so-called and innocent bomber during the Atlanta Summer Olympics,
so many examples, right? And that is what makes me wonder. Let's turn the lens. I mean, you were mentioning, okay, so the law enforcement officials use the media in a certain way, but the media is also apt to call people sources close to the investigation, quote unquote, and, you know, who may not be necessarily close to the investigation.
That is true. It's absolutely true. We don't know what kind of standards CNN was using. John King said that these were reliable sources, sources that they'd been to before. NPR had used a lot of sources that were well-placed when they wrongly reported and had to retract the idea that Gabby Gifford had died. Mm. I mean, a lot of times the worst stuff comes from official sources. Mm. And do we have to trust them? No, we don't. Yeah. We can wait, but then that leaves that gaping vacuum hole.
The gaping hole of the news cycle that we are living in this day and age. In the last couple minutes we have, Brooke, I wanted to ask you about that in particular. I mean, the gaping hole is also driven by the fact that, you know, news evolves from second to second in the digital age. And once information is out there, it's gone. It spreads immediately, and it's impossible to get it back. So how much worse does that make the problem, or does it? Do we just know how to handle it on our own as individual consumers of news?
Well, I think we're learning. I think we're learning how to deal in this world of information. And also, even though it goes out there quickly, it also gets corrected more quickly. I mean, if you go back and look at the wrong reporting around Watergate, there was a lot of things that Walter Cronkite said that were just not true. And they were either not corrected or walked back much later, and no one much noticed. And it happens all the time. Of course, it happened during Katrina. We all remember that very well. Not the finest hour, and there was a lot of misreporting in the wake of the immediate wake of 9/11, or in the process of 9/11. So, I mean, the thing is that now, because the internet is so much more defined, so much more used, so much more employed in all these areas, more crap goes out there, and more crap can get walked back very quickly. So almost nobody who's paying attention thinks there was an arrest now, and they probably didn't think so by, 235.
But ideally, though, we would be living in a world where most, if not all, of the information that is released via the media is as accurate as could be. I mean, what's your thought on how to make, you know, the sense of accountability within media organizations greater when the pressure from, you know, the news cycle and the digital age is so great to get stuff out there?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I have to say that there are different solutions for different media. when you talk about the cable news channels, I mean, it's sort of like an electronic fireplace. That's why people can sit there and watch car chases. They like to see it all day long, which is why they flood the zone on every moderately large story. Maybe they shouldn't do that. Maybe they should reconsider talking about what's going on in the rest of the world and only going back when there's really something to say. I don't think that would have prevented the enormous gaffe committed by CNN. But I do think that over the long haul, it would increase the quality of the coverage that they chose to report.
Brooke Gladstone is host and editor of WNYC's On the Media and author of The Influencing Machine, Brooke Gladstone on the Media. She was speaking with us today about the massive media fail that happened around the Boston Marathon story yesterday. Brooke, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.